Hello and welcome to SourceCast episode number 27. I'm your host, Joey Lombardi. This episode is a special episode of SourceCast, and it is one of our panel discussions. As I mentioned at the end of episode 26, there was a Fast Company article that discussed men's changing friendships in the workplace. I thought that the article had good bones to build an entire panel podcast, and that's exactly what I did. I'm very pleased that Todd, John, Bill, and Kevin were able to give up their free time to discuss their opinions about friendship, not only in the workforce, but on a personal level, what friendship means to them, and what they need from their friendships. We ended up talking for several hours, but the edited version of this podcast gets it down to about 40 minutes. The discussion was thoughtful, it brought up some very interesting points, and I'm very pleased to present it to you today. So please enjoy this special edition of SourceCast, episode number 27, because we're talking about friendship. So thank you guys for joining tonight. In today's podcast that I just released, I mentioned at the end of the broadcast this article from Fast Company that talks about friendship in men, specifically in the workplace. Having worked in a corporate setting for close to 20 years, I seem to believe and feel some of the things that they talked about. And I wanted to get your opinions as people who are both close to my age, and then also we have some millennials. And I want to get everyone's take on establishing friendship in the workplace. When you started out in your career, how did you feel about establishing friendships with the people that you worked with? Did you stick closer to your college-age friends?
I think my first job out of school was like a really short stint at this small company, and there's a class of people that we were all like 21, 22 years old. So it just felt like an extension of college. So that was, I don't think, is a good example. But when I moved to my second company, you know, where it was a larger company, more diverse crowd, I think you just tend to gravitate towards a few people that are, you know, probably either within a certain age range or have certain interests, you know, something about them that you're compatible with. Have I stayed in touch with any of them? No. I mean, I still keep in touch with people from my last job, and I don't know if that's just a matter of showing up for happy hours every now and again. So I wonder about that sometimes.
Well, those first couple of jobs, were they geographically, are they more difficult for you to access those people now?
No. A large part of work friendships is convenience. I mean, these are people that you see every day, and it makes it easy to be friends. It's like being friends with people in high school. You see them every day because you show up at the same spot of the crowd. Maybe you'll pick one or two that you stay in touch with after you leave that job. I mean, that's been my experience. So, I mean, who has time to maintain that diverse, different number of friends, you know? So
that's one of the primary premises of the article. There's all this gloom and doom about men and males. It started, I guess, in the 70s. That men are ultra competitive with each other in the workforce. So they really didn't establish friendships at that time period. And then there were similar articles in the 80s that echoed the same sentiment.
So quick question about the focus of the discussion. Is it about male friendship or is it about male friendship in the workforce?
It's about both. The premise of multiple articles that I've read about this is that women are better at establishing friendships or have historically been better at establishing and maintaining friendships, either in a corporate workplace or in a personal level. Men apparently seem to have had the ability to maintain friendships, or had the perception of doing so in the 50s because people worked at their jobs for 35 years. You see the same dude every day, they're your drinking buddies, they're your lodge buddies, et cetera, et cetera. With people flipping jobs so much and moving around, that seems to have killed the concept of the male friendship, or that's what they're saying in these articles, and also this ultra-competitive nature in the corporate workforce. But they're saying that there's a tonal shift now, that men are working towards friendships and are more considerate towards each other. And that's what I'm sort of seeking in this podcast. Is this true? Is it not true? And what are your general feelings about it?
I'd like to jump in because, Todd, you mentioned something that I definitely identify with. I definitely agree that convenience is a major factor for me. The first thing that jumped out for me, that second half of the article, they start talking about male friendship at the office, and they say, in the past, workplace competition is the biggest barrier for men to develop a friendship. And I almost have never thought that way. I can't even think of ever having feelings of I'm introduced to somebody and say, well, this guy is my peer and could potentially take a promotion from me, so I should avoid building a relationship with him. And I don't know if that changes for somebody who's a little bit older, but that was the first thing that, you know, shocked me. I was like, well, you know, there's women in the workplace who are just as much able to take a job from me, you know, anybody. And I'm not really, you know, when you're working with people around you, you're looking to just integrate with whoever you need to get the job done. And you building a friendship is only going to help you do that better. And I don't really look at it as competition. That's almost after the fact for me. So that was the thing I wanted to comment on.
Bill, what's your take on that? When you come into a new work environment and you're starting to get friendly with people, do you think of these people as potential competition?
No. I mean, not specifically in my work area. We're a union shop, so it's a little bit different. I don't feel that people are necessarily comparing themselves to others when it comes to friendships. I think if people are going to be friends, they're going to be friends. If they're comparing themselves to someone else for promotional reasons or whatever, I think that's kind of aside. You know, myself personally, I don't have many friends at work. It's just how it is. You know, it was mentioned earlier, it is out of convenience. It is out of who's in your proximity, who sits close to you. I mean, I have a couple people on another floor that I talk to occasionally, but we were friends in the past and now we've grown apart and feel out other people's feelings and how they are and how they perceive you. And you hear them talking about you behind your back and stuff like that. All that crap happens at work too. You don't want to put up with any of that either. So that also alters things.
And you don't think that talking behind your back for them is an act of competition?
Nah, I just think some of them are morons, to be frank. I mean, it's just personalities. I do think some people are trying to get ahead. Yeah, but I don't think they're doing that to get ahead.
You don't think that they have an active plan or strategy and talking behind your back is part of it?
Nah, they have no reason to. I mean,
yeah, I think it takes time to build up that level of competition. The workplace is different, you know, like there are no pensions anymore. You know, people aren't working at the same company for 30 years feeling like they got to be loyal to one company and stay there. I mean, I think that made that competition more prevalent. You know, we have 401ks. We go somewhere, if we're vested, we take our money with us. And people don't, you know, no longer are we working for the same company for the most part for, you know, the beginning until the end of our careers. So come in, you recognize that, you know, you want to work hard, you want to maximize what you can. And if you get yourself back into a corner where you're competitive and you lose out, you always have the option of going somewhere else. And I think that not feeling trapped like that probably has reduced that feeling of competition that other, you know, maybe older generations felt.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Todd. One of the things that particular article started to mention towards the end, hierarchical flattening and the ability to have movement. But that's, I think, kind of a confusing point, though, because you have the ability to move, but to what you said earlier and to what both of you guys said earlier, it's a convenience factor as well. So if you're jumping, are you losing those connections from a friendship level, not from a professional level?
No, I would say yes, but I would say that you're building new ones.
Well, I think when it comes to the competition aspect, it has a lot to do with the type of work you're in. For instance, two guys on the same sales desk, yeah, you know, the competition is a lot more in your face. It's about the numbers you're producing. It's about, you know, the goals you're hitting. Two guys on the same team, maybe in more of an overhead function, I think the competition is still definitely there, but it's not such an obvious factor, so it might not take precedence over, you know, establishing a relationship with the other person on a level greater than work.
But did any of you guys sort of have that feeling? There's a line here, and I don't want to cross it, especially early on.
I think that, exactly. Early on, if you're just starting a new job or you got someone else coming in that you've been there for a while, you got to feel the person out. It's kind of like Survivor. You know, you're on an island, you're at work, you got to feel out the personalities. You got to feel who's going to backstab you, who's going to be your ally. I mean, that's just how it seems to work.
Yeah, I definitely agree that you kind of throw out little feelers where you'll say something and just, it's like an example of your personality that you throw out. And then if the person kind of reciprocates your ideology or just agrees with you on something, you know that they're kind of on the same page as you. You can slowly go and build on that.
So what do you think the moment is where you cross over and you're like, I can establish a personal friendship or relationship with this person that goes beyond the office?
I think it's maybe when something happens and there's that mutual understanding that neither of you can tell anyone else about it.
Go deeper on that.
You and this other person had a shared experience that you don't want to share with anybody else in the office and kind of like might incriminate you.
Yeah, I'm not talking about something like illegal, like you bang your body or whatever, but you know.
But how do you create that experience? If you have your guards up and you're sort of not putting yourself out there and you're sort of being protective of yourself, how does that situation arise if you sort of have your shields up?
I think it happens over time, naturally sort of.
What you're basically saying, though, is that there has to be this like breakout moment. So you're just...
I think for me, I think it can happen in stages.
Yeah, exactly. Stages.
you know, like maybe you're talking trash on someone and the other person agrees, you know, maybe little feelers here and there, and then eventually progresses. Especially when somebody new joins, you know, you're talking to them and you're keeping it, you know, social, but you don't want to relay any information relating to the workplace that might incriminate you, or, you know, nothing terrible, but you don't like this one person, for example. So you can just kind of put feelers out to see how they feel about that person, things like that.
I think the environment comes into play big too. You know, over time, you just organically sort of have a thing where you notice if someone is in the office or not, someone at work, and you know, you're glad to see that they're in the office. It makes your day better. But I think that one of the big steps when you hang out and do something outside of work, you know, that's a different dynamic. You know, now it's not a thing of convenience. Now it's not something where you're forced to be in the same spot every day. You both made a choice to do something on your personal time. And that sort of feels like an entry point.
Yeah, I mean, like with you, when you and I became friends, it was definitely a slow, first it's a lunch, and then it's a happy hour after work. And then after that sort of happened, we got comfortable with each other pretty quickly.
Yeah, you get a feel. You know, they're a good guy. They're trustworthy. I mean, you just get a sense of that over time. You just don't want to waste your time with someone who's you don't have that sense about. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. Over time, I think someone said a thing about sending out feelers. And you do. You send out feelers. You get a sense of pretty fragile stage in the beginning there. Like, all it takes is one misstep, and you're just like, all right, you're done. We'll be work buddies, but that's about it. Once you start to trust somebody and confide in them, then, you know, I think that's you're on your way.
Once you do that, that doesn't even guarantee that you're going to have a friendship beyond work. You know, if you switch jobs,
true.
I think that it can easily end out of the convenience that we spoke earlier.
Well, that's the great disconnect, Bill, and I think actually that's a good transition point. So we've been talking about sort of how we fill out and establish like the initial friendship at work, but let's step it back. So I've gone through a couple of sets of friends in my personal life and through work. I'm sort of reflective now in the fact that you can see the ebb and flow of friendships and how you're at different stages in life. But I guess I'll ask a very generic but powerful question. How important is it for you right now for you guys to really have a substantial set of friends in your life, whether it be at work or on your personal level? Or would you rather be isolated and kind of to yourself?
I think it's definitely important not to be isolated. You know, when it comes down to it, friends or no friends, I pick friends.
But why? Go deeper. It's obviously, it's good to have a friend.
So someone to hang out with, someone to just like either chill or go do things, or, you know, you're not going to go to a concert alone. You're not going to go out to dinner alone. You're not going to hang out and play solitaire.
I think the thing we've been hitting on, and obviously, I mean, I agree with Kevin. It's like, you know, you need friends wherever you go. You're never going to want to be the isolated person. But I think we've been touching on this idea of convenience and like looser friendships. And I think to bring it back to the article they were talking, they kind of painted males in general as having these like very superficial face level friendships, like, hey, bro, you know, like there's never any deep discussion. But I think the dynamic is changing, that we're realizing we're changing our lives, we're changing jobs, and we're constantly, like you said, jumping in and out of these different circles. So we kind of know in the back of our head that, you know, we're going to have to be able to jump to a new group, and we can't be broken to pieces when we have to leave that other friend group because we're changing our lives. And I don't know if it really means that the friendship is superficial per se, or just not as deep of a connection. I think it's just both sides realize you're part of the group for that moment in life, but things change pretty quickly. And I think that was jumped out at me in the article, is I don't know if I believe that's true. They kind of made this allusion to the war had some sort of effect in the earlier times, and then that kind of just held on. I don't know if that's true. Kind of wanted to touch on that.
I guess if you're sitting in a foxhole with some other dude or a bunch of other dudes, you're going to get pretty tight. And especially
if
someone,
everybody went away to war, and then like nobody, it was like real competitive when everybody got back or something, and then they were, I don't know.
I think the point was people go away at war, they form friendships and bonds, and then they keep them after war. Especially if they're in the same job that they then would keep for 30-some years. Mm-hmm. That's the way I took it.
The war specifically, and you know, when we're saying the war, I'm assuming that we're talking about World War II.
Yeah.
That was obviously a transformative event in America because multiple things happened. And I think this is an important point to make. In World War II, Americans were kind of isolated before that. We were not, as a whole, cultured, especially the middle class and the lower class. So now you have these boys that were shipped off to Europe, sent out to the Pacific, and they came back a little bit more cultured, a little bit more aware of the world. And then what they did for their children, they wanted to sort of replicate that experience without them getting shot at. So that became the college experience. And that college experience really wasn't about you learning how to do a job. It was about you going off and living in a dorm and thinking about thinking. And that kind of created this interesting culture rolling into the 80s and the 90s. But that's sort of the basis of a lot of this neo-friendship thing, or whatever you want to call it, this newer thoughts about friendship. So you had the dudes in the foxholes, taking bullets, getting tight, working 35 years at a job. Then you get these kids who didn't have that experience. They went to college. It was sort of light. It was sort of airy. They became the yuppies. Corporate greed, competition, blah, blah, blah. Now that became bad. And then you had this whole generation of people that rebelled against that. And now we're rolling up into the now. And you're sort of seeing a visceral reaction to that.
I think it's really true. I mean, I never really thought about it from that perspective, like the war and then college. But you touched on a really good point earlier that probably the quickest and arguably one of the strongest ways to grow close to other people is like shared experiences, shared hardships, which war is obviously going to do. Someone working in an air-conditioned office job is not going to experience that same intense level of bonding, probably. But I bet there's a correlation between people who work on teams with like very difficult jobs and that have to work together a lot probably become better friends with each other than people who just sort of, you know, either work in silos or don't deal with anything particularly stressful.
You know, I know Joey doesn't want to talk about his own concepts like the social garden, but I'm going to bring it up because I like it. Does everyone understand Joey's social garden theory?
Refresher.
I'll do a small refresher. The idea of the social garden is to have a garden is work. It doesn't grow beautiful by itself. It's constant maintenance. You're constantly getting your hands dirty. You're constantly having to architect the way it's going to look. You can view friendship that way, and you can sort of approach friendship that way. Because if you take a passive approach to friendship, it's either going to grow wild or it's going to wither. So you have to take an active role in grooming friendships, in pulling out weeds that aren't growing right or causing damage. You have to be the right person to be a gardener. Not everyone says, I'd love to have a garden. Some people put a bunch of pavers and concrete in their backyard.
My garden's a whole bunch of freaking weeds.
I was gonna say, you go in my backyard, right? But the point is, you can be someone that takes this active approach to grooming and maintaining these friendships and putting all the work in. Or you could be the passive one. You can be the weed growing or the beautiful thing that someone is. You're a part of someone else's garden, basically. Now that you've had the background, have at it, Todd.
Yeah, like I didn't look at it so much about active or passive gardening. I looked at it more like a finite space, like a finite plot of space for friends. Because friends, friendships, relationships, it all just takes effort and time. And, you know, not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, I mean, you have a finite amount of time and effort in your life to maintain good friends. So I think everyone's probably had a group of friends in every phase of their life, elementary school through now, where some made the cut and some have dropped off. And it's just because, you know, you only have so much time and effort in you to maintain friendships that it's got to be worth it. For me, I think it's a competition where, you know, I only have so much time and, you know, and I'm respectful of my friends that when, you know, they've all started having kids, you know, I dropped off of people's out of their gardens because I don't have kids. So they get together because it's convenient for them to get together with other parents with kids because it's convenient, makes it easier to maintain that friendship. So, you know, their little garden plot reduced drastically because they didn't have as much time and effort. That's the way I look at it. And, you know, I think that every, regardless of environment, you know, as you roll along in life at different jobs, different anything.
So let me ask all of you this question then. We've established in this conversation that friendship is important. We don't want to be isolated. But how much effort are all of you willing to proactively take to maintain and develop friendships?
Well, how do you really quantify that effort? I mean, especially without, I think it definitely varies by situation and just things that happen in your life, things that happen with your friends, with your relationships. If you had to put an amount on it, I'd say, yeah, a good amount of effort.
I'm not putting an amount. I'm asking if there's a willingness. And I don't want to pull the whole millennial. I'm not going to use the word millennial. I'm going to use the word, because it's not a millennial thing. I'm going to say you're in your early 20s and you're probably at the precipice of the drop-off, as I like to call it. And Todd and Bill, you can back me up or disagree with me. But 24 is when it really started to happen with me. It was literally a complete change of the tires kind of thing at 24, 25. And a whole group went out and a whole group went in around that time. In my background, a lot of work was put into that, especially during that time period, because it was a complete rebuilding phase. But that was active. That was very proactive on my part. So the question to you guys is, as you may be experiencing this, let's assume I'm going to paint a picture for you. For whatever reason, all of your friends drop out. What do you do? What's your strategy to rebuild that? Let's say you move to a different town. What's your plan?
I just got thrown off by that, but I like the idea we talked about earlier of active versus passive. Mm-hmm. And I guess, Joey, to your question just now, if you're moving to a new town, you certainly have to be the active gardener and go out and determine, you know, what kind of people am I looking to hang out with? And you really got to start working on building a whole new social garden. But I think you mentioned before the age 24 is when you really started to go from passive to active and just, you know, clearing out your existing group and just saying, these people can be left behind. These people are staying with me. And I think myself, I'm already starting to see that change, where I was very passive in college because I was just getting thrown at with new relationships left and right. I mean, really every single day I was seeing dozens of people. Being in a fraternity, it was almost like I had to put zero effort into, you know, the whole concept of that was just gathering people of like ideologies and just all being in one place because you know you're going to get along. And so that required a lot less tending to any kind of friendships. But then, you know, I graduated, immediately lost a certain amount of people. And then you just started to have people where you could see their lives were going in different directions that you didn't necessarily agree with. So then you're kind of actively shutting them off to a sense. And then I'm already seeing, like you said, I'm turned 25 this year. I'm already switching to from passive to active and just really cutting a lot of people out because there's only so many more years I can put effort towards this. I really don't want to have them, you know, influencing my life to any degree.
I definitely agree with that. To some extent, I don't know if I agree with the whole thing, or I mean, obviously it can be totally circumstantial too, but I think, you know, in college I did the same, you know, fraternity thing, meeting people all the time, hanging out with people all the time. You didn't really have to quote unquote work too hard, but I think we still formed strong friendships. Now they were just different in the sense that they were in a college setting rather than the real world setting, but I wouldn't say that I've lost any friends since graduating. Yeah, geographically, I don't see most of them on a regular basis, and people that I hung out with a decent amount, you know, I don't really hang out with at all, but my good friends, we still, you know, see each other when we can. We try and visit each other in different cities, go on trips, and we still put in the effort, and I wouldn't consider anyone to not be my friend anymore just because we don't live on the same 100-acre property.
I guess you could quantify it as a voluntary loss of a friend versus involuntary, just circumstances out of your control that you're no longer really keeping up with them day to day.
So let me ask you this question. Since you established this premise of, I have friends that have kind of gone off and done different things, they live in different states, I don't need to see them every day. It goes back to the question I was asking you guys earlier. What is your expectation and what is your need of a friendship? Specifically, what is it that you need from that friendship? What is the reason why you seek it out? And if they are not physically available to you, why do you think that that satisfies the need?
I think sometimes you need someone to help you out with some things, be it advice or...
Like move a couch?
Move a couch. You know, and that also is part of a need as well. You know, you need someone's help, but you also need that social aspect as well.
Bill and I went to college together, and we were friends since freshman year. Bill saw, you know, we ramped up together. And then Bill's one of the few survivors. So what's your take on that?
You know, I think as life evolves, each person's life evolves, things change about themselves, things change about how they feel about other people. You know, you have also life events to consider as well. You know, you finish college, okay, everyone's all in the same area looking for a job. Some people already have a job. Some people are still looking. Then changing of jobs, and then marriage, girlfriends, kids, moving, houses, apartments, you know, all that stuff takes into consideration the how easy it is to be friends with someone and, you know, the work involved in it and how close you are. And then you have the whole Facebook aspect, which, you know, my feeling about that. But people might consider someone a friend because they're friends on Facebook.
Well, say
I don't know.
Tell people what you think about Facebook.
I can't stand it. I don't use it. And I don't consider anybody that, you know, wishes me a happy birthday through Facebook. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I only found out about it in April that some people wish me a happy birthday in January. So I never use it. I don't consider it a source of friends or source of maintaining friends either, of course. I'm not really the best person to be maintaining friendships either. You're talking about the friendship garden, or I forget, social garden. And mine's not that great. I'm not very proactive. I'm not really, I'm very passive with the friendships. And, you know, maybe that's something I should look into and change about myself, because I'm not overflowing with friends, but I'm doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you feel okay about that? I mean, that's ultimately the question, right?
Yeah, yeah. I guess that is the question. Sometimes it's all right, and sometimes it's not. So, I mean, I guess it depends on how you're feeling and what your needs are in that moment. You know, if you're feeling lonely, then clearly you're going to want a friend to talk to or hang out with or whatever. I guess if you're not, if you're an antisocial to begin with, which, you know, I would consider myself antisocial, and you know, I guess I'm not always going out there. I'm not always going out to, never really did go out to the parties and the bars and hanging out with people and all that stuff. I guess I just don't need as many friends as the next person because of that.
Which goes to the isolation point that I was making earlier. You kind of really helped to quantify that. But again, for the other guys on the call, Bill mentioned a confidant, someone you can talk to, and it's nice to have someone help you move a couch. But for the other guys, what do you seek from a friendship? What do you require from a friendship?
There's certain aspects that are universal across all friendships, or at least most of mine, and some that are unique. Yeah, there are certain groups of friends that I hang out with more regularly because we live together, and there are certain groups of friends that I see once in a while, so you know, our activities might be oriented differently. Like, you know, I have a group of friends that I'm more likely to go on a ski trip with, some group of friends that I'm more likely to go to like dive bars with or go to, you know, music festivals and concerts with. But it's not like I... All those friendships, it's still like, you know, we can talk about some profound life philosophy and then the next sentence be making, you know, stupid jokes.
I think I'd like to just take it a little bit higher, because we were talking earlier about, you know, quantifying amount of work and just numbers kind of thing. But for me, a lot of it is what you get out versus what you put in kind of thing. Are your friends making you better? Are they motivated to do something positive for their life or for you? You know, it's like, it's not like I'm always saying, all right, I need to rely on this guy for X, Y, and Z. But the way I like to change myself over time is I hang out with certain people and I take little bits of personality from them that I like. It's kind of like an inspirational kind of connection thing where they're building you up in some way in your life over time. And it's not this like crazy obligation, but there's something about them that is positive or in putting back what you're putting into the relationship, so you keep them along because you know they're going to be good to help you out later on in life, versus the guys that, you know, you're social gardening and you're taking out, they're always dragging you down, or they need something from you but they can't necessarily provide something back. They're that guy who says, hey, how you doing, and then they go, can you do this for me, instead of, you know, they're just there to hang out with. So I don't know if anybody identifies with that.
I think I understand what you're saying. There's a phrase I heard somebody use once, I guess it was like an emotional bank account, you know, where you're making deposits on the bank account, you know, you're talking with this other person, making deposits, and then there's emotional withdrawals, which maybe they are hitting you up to move the couch or whatever like that, and there becomes the balance. And when you find someone where you reach that balance of the give and the take, then you can have a friendship and you can get along together, as opposed to the person at work who's maybe just taking you, you know, trying to get information out of you, trying to do this, you know, whatever. They're not going to become a friend, and you're going to realize that, and you're going to see, okay, this person just wants this from me. I can do that, but I got to understand that they're never going to be there for me.
That's where my madness generally emanates from when it comes to friendship. The times when I sit down and start to ponder, am I putting more into this relationship or friendship than the other person? That's when I usually start to do the trimming. But I will say, and I think Todd had mentioned this point, that chemical reaction in my brain is considerably less prevalent since I've had a kid. My mental criteria for, is this person friend-worthy? I think I'm quicker to judge people and eliminate them out of the gate, but I'm also a little bit more forgiving as far as, and I'm using air quotes, the contribution that they're making. This person is a decent human being. I'm willing to accept more flaws than I was at a younger age.
How noble of you.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know,
yeah.
As you get older, you're realizing that, and you can let people go. You know, let them stay around despite their flaws.
I think that it's very likely that I will probably enter a very different phase of friendships through my son. That's probably the next phase or frontier. That will probably be an area rich for mining in the future.
I was in Boy Scouts for several years, and my father became friends with the scoutmaster there, and they're still friends. So you just never know.
For the older guys on the call, we've been through it. I don't want to exclude the younger guys, but we've probably been through a few iterations of friend groups. At times, do you feel lonely? Do you feel like you are lacking in friendships or lacking in immediate friends to have access to?
Yeah, sometimes I do.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, but it's funny. It's if I'm home and I have lots of energy and I want to go do something and I don't have anyone to do anything with, then I'll feel that way. But you know, for every opportunity that's happened, there's been a time when I've been at home reading a book and someone's tried to pull me out and I've been like, no, I'm here reading this book. Like, I've been listening and, you know, this is probably the most thought I've ever given into, you know, the concept of friendship. I've never tried to quantify it. I've never tried to put an equation. I mean, some of the discussion today, it almost made it sound like a homeostatic equation where the equal give and take, or, you know, is what are you willing to put in? You know, what do you expect? You know, I guess I don't think of it that way. Is it someone who you value spending time with? Do they value spending time with you? And do you want to put forth the effort to keep them in your orbit? Do they want to keep effort to keep you in their orbit? And if that doesn't happen, then you drift away. You still consider them friends. And you might see them a year from now at the grocery store, start chatting and be like, hey, you know, we gotta get together. You know, there's no resentment. You're not angry with them. And maybe you do get together, maybe you don't. I guess I haven't really thought of it in the way that we've discussed it tonight.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I haven't really thought about it that way either. But then that just because we're not thinking about it that way doesn't mean that other people aren't, yeah, as well. So Joe, he just said that, you know, he's thinking about it all the time, or at least he used to, cutting people out because they're not putting in enough or things like that. So, yeah, I guess that makes me think too. Like, I never really thought about it that way, but...
You know, the takeaway to that is, I think Kevin said it, when you're in college, you have access to so many different people. It's so easy to have friends. Like, Bill, we would roll with 25 or 30 guys. We'd go out. There's a certain degree of invincibility with that. You feel, I'm always going to have a million people that I have access to. Initially, that the culling of those numbers was probably more by my design, but you become appreciative of the process of making friends. And I think I'm more respectful of the act of making a friendship because it's infinitely more difficult as every year goes by. So the next question I have for all of you is, how do you make friends? What's your process?
I mean, I guess it's got to be an organic process. Like, you got to either meet them, you have to meet them somehow, and that means there has to be a commonality. So maybe that commonality is job. Maybe that's an interest. You're at the gym, or you're, you know, you're taking some sort of class. That's probably the hardest part, is making that initial, to use a professional term, that down select, you know, of all the fish in the ocean, you know, what puts you in proximity to some that are interesting. You're not going to walk up to some random stranger and start talking to them like, hey,
will you be my friend?
Will you be my friend? You know, will you be my heterosexual life mate, please? You know, so I think you need a commonality. I mean, you need something initial to create a bridge.
I think that if you have the goal of, you know, your goal or your mission is to make a friend, it becomes far more difficult than if you're saying, oh, I want to take a class. Because then if your goal is to make a friend, how would you go about that? You know, and like you said, you might take a class, you might do this, you might do that. But if your ultimate goal is to come out with a friend, though, that makes things a little bit different.
And you might come off with a very creepy vibe.
Exactly.
It's like the cable guy. Was it the cable guy?
Yeah, it's the cable guy.
I just want to hang out. No big deal.
Let's circle back around to the beginning now that we've had this lovely discussion. Not to reiterate, but, you know, we've established that obviously friendships are important. They're a good thing. At some times they're plentiful and other times they're precious. To take it back to a corporate setting, I want to hear from across the board what your thoughts are ultimately about making a friend at the office or your workplace. And then ultimately, what criteria would it take to maintain it beyond a job change?
For me to maintain a friendship, I think it's just as long as you have, you know, similar interests. I was going to say earlier, I literally just throw out some random joke, like a Chappelle show reference, and if they like that, I know I'm going to like them as a friend. I'll just, you know, they're a good guy.
I'm Rick James.
And then moving forward to another place, it's, I think, proximity. If they're going to be putting in something to the friendship that benefits me, I'll keep them along no matter where I go. You know, I always want to stay in touch with somebody who's going to be a beneficial friend for me.
Well, I think I wouldn't say there are criteria. Going to what Todd said, I think it definitely happens organically and gradually. But I think what ultimately shifts it from a, you know, quote-unquote work friendship to a quote-unquote normal friendship is when your primary driver for hanging out with that person goes beyond work. That's the dividing line for me, if there even is one.
I'm not really viewing work friendships as different from any other friendships. I mean, I guess, did you build a strong enough bond, and is it strong enough to last when you lose the convenience of being in such close proximity to somebody? And it may be that it lasts for a month, it may be that it lasts for a year, it may be that it lasts forever. I mean,
is that your cat?
Yeah,
Give a shout out to the cat.
Yeah, my four-legged friend.
So let me ask this question then. Is there any way to create an erosion-proof friendship? Is there anything in your head that says this friendship is going to last forever? Is there anything in your head, any kind of criteria?
No.
Emotional thing? Nothing. There's nothing is bulletproof.
Nope. I don't. I mean, I think it's just your definition of friendship. I mean, I don't think, my opinion, that you can really go in with that type of mindset. I mean, you just have to, everyone's got to live their own lives.
I guess what I'm circling in on, and I'm not quite sure how to articulate it. You know, this article basically sets up this premise where, like, guys aren't great at making friends, especially later in life. One of the first podcasts that I tried to create, and I think, Todd, you've heard early versions of it. It was like the very first podcast I tried to do was about friendship, and it was about, there was this other article, and I'm not sure what it was. I'll have to go back and see if I can find it. The article goes on to say that women kind of drop out when they have children with their girlfriends and friends and whatnot, because they're obviously doing the child-rearing thing. But the article went on to say that they got better at developing these long-term relationships and friendships, and then they ultimately de-emphasized their husbands at later in life, whether it be through their daughters or other women. And the guys, on the other hand, don't. And it's like you said, I think they use some like reference like, oh yeah, I have some buddy in Portland that I go surfing with randomly like once a year, and we live in different states.
I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, if you think about your own parents, how many friends does your mom have? How many friends does your dad have?
Yeah. Neither.
Yeah. That's an interesting question for my dad. You know, you've met my dad. The guy doesn't talk, but he has a council of friends. Like, he's got like his core three guys, and they hang out all the time. And my mom has a million friends. She has little tiny, like, it's like a bird feeder of friendship. She keeps herself occupied throughout the whole day with a variety of different people. That's an interesting example, because my parents are actually quite good at maintaining friendships in their own unique ways. So that's sort of an interesting model for me to sort of replicate. But my old man is also the first guy, you know, if you annoyed him, never talk to you again. Iced. I don't know, what about your parents? Like, what's your models? Like, your parents have friends?
No, mine don't.
Tell it like it is.
I love the way you just dropped that in. It was like, nope.
No, but maybe that's why it's tough for me. I don't know. I mean, you know, we don't really talk too much about it, but my mom is looks like she's building friends and relationships around the neighborhood and the gardening club and stuff like that. Dad, no idea. I don't know if he even has any.
Well, I think my dad's friends are his wife's friends. Like, I don't know that she has friends that are his friends. I think his friends are all from her pool of friends.
Is he grateful for that, or is he annoyed by that?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think my dad has... I don't know if my dad and my mom follow the mold. I think my mom definitely has more friends, so my dad definitely has his own separate friend group for sure. You know, the typical golf buddy kind of thing. But I do think that my mom is more socially active and more open to new friends, whereas I think my dad has had the same group for a while now and is really not making any effort to change that.
And, you know, for me growing up, I don't even remember them having any friends or bringing them around or any social activities, really. It was just the family. And now, you know, we have a 15-year-old and she's seeing us socialize a little bit here and there. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't remember that with my parents.
That's interesting, man. That's a really interesting perspective, and I didn't really know that about you. That's what I'm saying, man. Some people are just like...
introverted. It's just being more introverted.
Yeah, man. Just plug me into the Matrix and give me some Chinese food.
Video games. That's where it's at.
That's how I feel about Netflix. You know?
Oh, geez.
Sucked in on a, you know, on a good Daredevil run.
Yeah, if you mention, like, you're going to watch Doctor Who or there's a new season of something coming out, I don't even bother asking you if you want to go do something that weekend.
Nah. I definitely went on a bad Doctor Who run for a while. That's true. But I'm all caught up now.
Well, guys, do you have any closing thoughts or any other thing that you want to bring up?
Joey, friendship is a garden. Dig it.
Yeah. That's going to be the title of the podcast.
I'm just going to like cut that part out and just put Macho Man Randy Savage being like, dig it.
But the cream will rise to the top. Oh, yeah. Macho madness, yes.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate your time tonight. I know that a lot of you guys are busy. You have your own things going on. I know, Todd, you have schoolwork to do. So I really appreciate you coming in and doing this podcast. And I will do everything in my power to not make it suck.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a regular now, man.
Well, you are a regular. You've been on every group podcast that I've done.
I get stock when you cash this out for $1 billion.
If I get $1 billion, you absolutely can get stock from it. If I get $1, you can have stock from it. All right, guys, I'm ending it there. Thank you so much. Good night.